This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 923, brought to you by Caffeine and Fatigue and iFanboy listeners like you. Folks, I am Josh Flanagan. You know me because I'm always here, as opposed to my co-host Connor Kilpatrick.
I was just gone last week. What are you talking about?
I thought today I'd lay back in the cut. You let you handle business. You know what I'm saying?
I don't want to talk anymore.
Well, we all know that's not true. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 920. I wasn't even going to say 823. I had a whole other number coming out.
You like the lotto. Just spit out some numbers.
Yeah, I run numbers in Southern New Hampshire.
You're not supposed to say this stuff on the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for one thing, they couldn't get me because they'd get me on the stand and they'd be like, do you run any numbers? And we're like, I don't even know what that really means.
I thought I did.
I wouldn't know how to do that.
I somehow lost money doing it.
You know those magnets with numbers? I drive those around in my car. That's what I thought we were talking about. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of them. The person who has been charged with the sacred duty to make the pick of the week. It's... There's a word no one uses. I have a calling. Like, not really. Like, no one you want to talk to uses it sincerely, I don't think. No. I have an authentic calling.
I have a calling to review sandwiches. That's what my calling is. I do it in my car.
I don't ever get served that guy's stuff anymore. I just realized that. I liked that guy. There's a bunch of comics. We picked the one that we like the best. We call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that. We talk about other comics because what's the point of reading 15 to 25 books every single week of your life if you're not going to talk about more than one of them? It's just math. There's other books. Like we said, there's a patron pick, which you people listening chose. There's listener mail. It's a good time. Con, I need something.
Why don't you just stop talking for a while? You talked enough last week.
I just forgot that I had someone else to fill space. There was a real moment last week where, like, I didn't know something. And, like, we're so used to that. But, like, I couldn't come up with the word because of the early onset dementia. And I realized, like, I have no out to look this up. Because right. I also didn't realize I can just stop it and edit it
in later.
Right,
you can edit.
I didn't want to do that, though.
You know, the next time you do a solo show, you should just pretend I'm there and have the conversation in your head. And then it'll just be long bits of silence. You'll be like, so what'd you think? And then like 30 seconds of silence. And then
everybody will start writing in. Be like, hey, you're missing a track.
Is Josh okay?
No. Nope, this was a performance piece. Connor, you thankfully had the pick of the week.
I did, and I had several books that I was thinking about choosing. And look, I didn't want to choose Fantastic Four again. We've had these books throughout the years where you're just like, damn it.
Yes, the Ruckism, I believe it's called.
It's Ed Brubaker, Captain America, the Scalped Syndrome. You know, it's just like, I read Fantastic Four 712 or 19. I read it last. And at that point, I had several books. I was like, oh, I could make this the pick. Oh, I could make this one the pick, too. And then I was like four pages in, and I was like, God damn, Ryan North.
It's stupid.
It's not even close. And the thing is, I think my last pick was that Spider-Man issue, right? That was my last pick of the week.
Yeah.
That was also a single issue story. And this is also a single issue story.
Yeah, most of them are.
And it's a skill that's sort of been lost in time because it's just not done that much. And when other people do it, sometimes it's not as satisfying, but he does these entirely satisfying single issue stories. I was halfway through this book when I had to remind myself that it was a single issue story because my brain is so used to thinking of them as arcs now that I was like, no, this is just going to end in 10 pages. Mm-hmm. And it was fully satisfying. He told a complete arc. And not only that, he had to build a new world and make you understand its rules and still tell a satisfying story. And that was incredible. And Carlos Gomez is a terrific artist.
I've said this before, but it keeps going on. Like, if you are a professional comic book writer or any kind of writer, and you are watching this guy burn through stories at a clip of one of them, I mean, like, think about, like, from just an economy standpoint, if you have to think of stories all the time and you can make one last four, five, six issues, that's just good planning, you know, if this is your career. And this dude is bursting with ideas. And the Talksplit was probably, I don't know, it was a year and a half or 2 years ago now. And I'd asked him about that because even then I thought it had been a lot and I had no idea it was going to go on. But I was like, you ever worry about burning through? He's like, no, that's what I do. And the thing that he did, I don't know how you tread the line of being really confident, but in no way arrogant, which is a skill all in its own. But it was just like, no, this is my job. This is what I have to do, which is what people who are good at their jobs do.
Right.
But, you know, writers sometimes somewhat precious. It's amazing.
Plus, you wonder, like, does he ever want to hang out in the, like, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm like an LA noir guy. Like, I love these movies. I love these books. And so I was like, oh, man, I would love this to have been like a three-issue arc because I just love the world. But the economy of it, it didn't need to be any more. And I don't even remember what happened at the end of the last issue. I don't believe this was something that was teased. I think we just sort of dropped in media res where the first page is black and white. A door opens. A slinky blonde enters in a red dress. Mm-hmm. And by the way, red and blue are the only colors in this story. And it's Alicia Masters' investigations. And she's the quintessential LA noir private investigator narrating her case that's brought by the beautiful femme fatale, how they almost always start. And you learn all this right away. You learn who everyone is, their relationships, what's happened. Reed Richards is missing. We get to travel through this world and meet all the players. Ben Grimm is Alicia's assistant and husband. And he's regular human shaped or sized or whatever those words are. And then Namor is the cop who helps her out. Mackenzie was his name when he had amnesia way back in the 60s. And he's Officer Mackenzie. Johnny Storm still has the mustache, even in this black and white noir world. He's the hot-headed younger brother.
That's the only consistent thing through this. Like, you'd think that some part of him would be like, all right, enough with the silly mustache, but I've just been... Because whenever you change a character drastically, and his personality has changed along with the mustache. He's a mustache guy version. He's not Johnny Storm from before. And I'm like, all right.
It gives you a bit of a swagger with the mustache like that.
Yeah, but it's like unearned confidence.
Sure.
That turns into actual valuable confidence. It's kind of interesting. I will say that setting up all that stuff in the beginning, which fits with the genre because it's about narrating sort of what's happening, it was a very wordy, prosaic bit of comic book. And it was like three or four pages of that, which I was kind of like, it wasn't bad. I just noticed it. I was like, there's a lot of telling.
Yeah, that's the genre. So he can do that for the genre. Mm-hmm. And then the reveal about where Richards was. The only thing I was missing from this is I was kind of hoping that Dr. Doom would be just in this world, not a major part of it or the bad guy, but just like a character in the world. But he wasn't. When they revealed where Reed was, I laughed at the page turn reveal. Like he's in this little vial, this tiny Reed. And then it's revealed it's a whole Cosmic Cube thing. And one of their, you know, dumb villains has a Cosmic Cube and they beat him. And I say dumb because like he's not one of their top tier guys.
Trapster?
I don't even remember who it was.
I feel like they were using his real name and they called him Pete. And so I was like, is this going to be a Paste Pot Pete thing? But it wasn't. I really thought that was what was going to happen.
I just loved it all. And Carlos Gomez does a terrific job of, you know, it's all very sexy and black and white and Jesus Abertoff's colors. He's working all in grayscale and black and white here. And it's just, it's a beautiful book.
Yeah.
And then
really
when
is.
The color sort of seeps in, and then when they're in the scene where Trapster's using the cosmic cube to sort of, or they're using it to reformulate the universe and the colors bleeding into the characters. It's a very good looking book. And again, just impressed that Ryan North can say, well, now I'll do a noir detective story and maybe I'll do a pirate story. Or he's using these characters completely malleably to tell all kinds of fun genre tales. And no one else in comics in the Big Two has a gig like this. He's got a lot of freedom to do whatever he wants, basically.
He's almost doing with the form in a single issue thing what Tom King is doing with the form in a 12-issue maxi series thing, if that makes sense. Like, it's just, I'll do this genre here. But he's doing them in a single issue. I think my favorite bit in this, because it was unexpected, because you get caught up in this world and you're like, okay, this is what it is now. And then when Reed, like, you realize that, and it's in the art, actually, that you can just see, like, wait, he's regular Reed there.
Yeah.
And he's blue. So when Reed is, like, you know, you realize it's connected to what we've been in before. I liked that a lot. That said, when he breaks out of the thing and he becomes period Reed with those goggles, I really like that.
I would love a Elseworlds story of this kind of, this Fantastic Four. But it's interesting because the first, you know, chunk of Ryan North's stories were short, one and done, two issues. But they were all leading to a place. They were leading to what happened. Why were the Fantastic Four expelled from New York? Oh, now we know. Now we got to wait for the kids to come back. Like, it was like acts. Act one was, why are they expelled? Why are they living in the country? Act two was, okay, we know. Now we're waiting for the resolution of the Baxter Building and all those people returning to their proper time. We're in act three now, and I don't know. Not act three. We're just in another act, and I don't know if he's building something else because we haven't really dealt with that, or if it's just telling stories and we're going to eventually. I'm just trained to think we're going to be going somewhere. Maybe we're not, but it's just interesting. It's the most interesting book on the stands from the Big Two.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that. To me, it's like the most impressive. I don't know, like, everybody does things the same way for the most part. They think of their epic overarching story, and then they're in 5-6 issue chunks, you know, and it can go on. And this dude's like, yeah, I'm going to do 400 different little stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all so different from one another. I think the best issue was the Trapped in Space in that time.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
I think that was probably the most, like, straight up Twilight Zone, you know, Star Trek kind of straight up sci-fi story. And then to tie that back in the way that it was going. I loved that. This issue wasn't my favorite. It's really good and I really liked it. I probably wouldn't have made a pick of the week. I wouldn't have. But when I read it, I was like, O'Connor's going to eat this up with a spoon and an old fashioned.
Credit to Alex Ross as well. The cover's terrific. Looks like an old pulp novel. And the next issue cover, Ben Grimm in a apron with a name tag and a price checker looking beaten. I'm excited.
I think it's worth noting because you had said, like, you know, we're talking about this book again. You know, there have been eras. There have been, you know, sort of creative runs, you know, in our time doing this show for 1,000 years, you know, when there's a special book. And we're watching a special run. Oddly enough, Dan Slott doing this before that was also a special run in a completely different way. But we lived in a Fantastic Four wasteland forever.
Yeah.
I mean, most of my life, you know, people couldn't figure it out, just like Superman. So, yeah, I mean, it really is a thing. And if you're Connor and I, and you have to make a pick every time, and there's a thing like, it's this again. I don't want to talk about it again, but, you know, there's usually a clear line where you just go, that's the best one.
That is the calling nature of the pick, is that you have to be true to the pick no matter what the book is, even if it's a book that's been picked many times before.
Right. Yeah. It just is.
Almost Action Comics 1064 from Josh Williams and Rafa Sandoval, Alejandro Sanchez and Dave Sharp. Despite the fact that there were several reasons why it shouldn't be, and also because I picked the first Action Comics from Jason Aaron, I didn't want to make it a pattern of picking the first arc, because I guess Action's going to be all about this anthology of creative teams. I really enjoyed this a lot. I did not like that they brought the family back. I mean, I don't like Lobo. I don't like 100 Lobos. And the opening scene was a little too cute by half, with Lois acting like she just moved to Metropolis from Ohio and being really kind of annoying.
That first bit, I had to readjust because I was like, this is dumb. And then I was like, for me, you know, like, you know, I thought, oh, we're going to do this thing, make it fun. This is, you know, other people would enjoy this. And
but then
and
I got into it. Crabby. I right, got over it and at. I was like, this is fun. Superman high five and the kid. Like, it was almost like, because they were clearly building up like this. Just like, mm-hmm. everyone's having a great day. Clark's showing up for yoga and he's totally a dork about it. And that's perfect. And then, you know, a million Brainiac robots and Lobos show up and it just ruins everything. And then it got super, I thought, exciting and fun and big, big summer blockbustery. And I think that interesting things happen with Lex. Brainiac has become this character in Superman where when he shows up, it's a bad situation.
Yeah.
The reveal that Lex was not responsible for the Lex hologram, that it was Brainiac the entire time, was interesting. This is going through all the books. Like, it continues in the Superman issue next time, which Josh Williamson is the writer of. So right. This is sort of like a Superman mini event. It worked for me. By the time I got to the end and there was a million Brainiacs, I was like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. And I thought this is a terrific Superman. I thought Rafa Sandoval was great. The pages were really full of chaos and action.
It changes, too. Like, yeah. There's a, what's this, a double page spread, 7 pages in, where Superman's flying. And that looks to me, it's a double page spread, and which we complained about 2 weeks ago. But he kind of, he's flying with seagulls, the shittiest of all birds.
How I know.
But it still makes it work. And then he sort of surfs through the water and he's looking up at the sky. And it, to me, it reminded me of a, this will be ironic, like an Astro City cover.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That looks like that kind of thing that Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross and Brent Anderson always tried to display about what is great about Superman. I remember what it was I didn't like about the beginning. This only thing is that she leaves a note that says, Lois's first day off in years, leave me alone, mm-hmm. and then goes wandering into a crowd of every single person she's ever met. And I was like, I don't think you know what leave me alone means, because I'll show you how to do that.
Right.
I just thought that was weird. There was a couple of times where I don't think I'd looked at the credit and I was like, who drew this? Because there are really wonderful panels through the whole thing. And like, so Clark shows up in the park to do yoga and he's got like his Smallville sweatshirt on and his, mm-hmm. His headband. And, yeah. And, you know, like, I was like, what a great panel. And it's super goofy.
He's a dork.
It's a great drawing. And we've talked about this a ton. A younger version of me would have been like, oh, this is stupid. But like, I want to lean into that. You know, like, let's have fun with it. Let's let it be silly. And you're right. That all leads into this really great reversal of, you know, all of the energy that wanted to be a goofy goes into being having it be sinister. You know, and it starts right on that. Is it on that same page?
It's on the same page where he's like.
Same page. Yep.
He's goofy yoga dork. And then the last panel, he's like, get to safety now. And then the very serious face. And he just turns on a dime. And I thought it was really well done.
Yes. I really liked that as a narrative moment. And you're right. It's on. That's great. I didn't even recognize it because it's in the bottom sort of, you know, eighth of the page in those two panels. And you realize and he's serious. You know, and they do that with lettering.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Good job, Dave Sharp.
Yeah. You got to give credit where it's due. He nailed that moment. He made that work.
By the time I got to the end of this, I was really excited for the next issue. And that's, I was like, oh, is it going to be Action Comics again? But it wasn't.
I know you're talking about, it couldn't have been because you can't go for a Bizarro book and then be okay with a Lobo book.
That's what I thought too. I was like, oh man, do I do a Bizarro then Lobo?
But look at this. This is growth.
Well, yeah, I guess it is.
It is.
Transformers 7, the newish era, new arc, new artist on Transformers. Danny Warren Johnson still writing about Jorge Corona, who often works with Scotty Young, is now the artist. I'm looking for the proper app that has it. It's in this one. And I actually really liked it, although didn't love it, but I liked it.
These all feel short. I really enjoy them, but they all feel like they're over instantly, which I understand because the art is very kinetic. And so you spend a lot of time like moving quickly. And so mm-hmm. you get to the end. There is a little bit of like, I feel like I want to be a little further in the narrative.
Yes.
But I also think that we're spending a lot of time with their, their feelings, which we kind of are. They're spending an inordinate amount of time where you're getting to know. This is sounds ridiculous. Like how the Autobots are good and empathetic, you know. And right. then the, you know, the Decepticons are awful. This is the one with the Starscream and Soundwave. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. This is the fight for control and supremacy of the Decepticons between Starscream and Soundwave, and the brutal sort of prison beatdown of Starscream. And it all goes back to last issue which we talked about, where Starscream kicked Ravage across the room, mm-hmm. and that's like Soundwave's kid. You don't do that.
He says my Ravage too, doesn't he?
Yeah. He has
my Ravage.
What's the bird's name?
Laserbeak.
Laserbeak plucks out Starscream's eye and brings it to Soundwave. I was like, Jesus. Also, a nice touch here was Optimus Prime has Megatron's arm with the gun on it. And so when he's in truck form, which I'm not even going to think about how that works.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the side of the truck is gray.
Oh, because the
page 19.
The exhaust, the smokestacks, or whatever they are, like the exhausts are both on his arms. And now that the other one's not there. So you got the big scope.
On page 19, you can see the side of the truck on that side. The back corner is gray.
I love it. I love that they were like, don't try to square the size physics.
Right.
Honestly, when I was a kid, it used to drive me insane. Not like angry, but I just was like, I was trying to wrap my head around it. And I think in retrospect, it is so brilliant that they just were like, we're not dealing with that.
It's the best way to do it. It's like time travel. If you try to explain time travel, the movie breaks.
Like, but also, like, if they don't do that, then nothing works. Because the toys made that impossible. But they stuck to the form, which was the right thing because it was the form of the toys that you were in love with first and foremost. Okay,
correct.
So there was worry that when Daniel Warren Johnson left the art duties of this book, that it would suffer. And it's not the same. My first instinct when I was reading it, though, was like, this looks really good. And it is certainly of a piece. So sometimes they choose a completely different direction to go. And sometimes they choose, you know, a similar track. And obviously they're doing the latter here. And it lends a very organic feel to these characters because they're robots and they're angular. And by doing the way that they're doing here, it's not unlike how they did the Lego in the Lego movies. Like they moved, they could emote, they can change, they keep everything stiff. They did in certain ways, but they could still do everything they needed to. However, I found several instances during this where I thought that there was unclear moments in the storytelling. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for instances of it.
There was one for me.
Yeah, there was a couple of them, and there was something in the fight where I was like, I cannot tell.
Page 10, where Soundwave, what I finally figured out, backhands Starscream, but it took me a while to figure out what I was looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a different thing. It doesn't have that manic, crazy dynamism that Daniel Warren Johnson can bring. It doesn't have the intense wrestling, choreographed fights, but I like Horn a lot.
He's great. I mean, he's doing a very difficult job. I did notice that making the effort to put in as much of the onomatopoeia, you know, sound effects on the board as possible with those. Like, he's not drawing these. Yeah. This is lettering that's coming from that.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know, if you think about the job that an artist on this book has to do, is to draw these robots.
It's a lot.
Incredibly detailed.
Yeah.
And then make them alive and be really dynamic in the action. It might take them a little bit to catch up. I'm not going to write it off, but there were definitely some storytelling problems, but I think it's probably a lot to get your head around. So I'll watch that. I'll see. But, you know, it's one of those things that comic book storytelling, you don't know when it's working. You only know when it's not working. And even then you might not be sure.
Right.
And, you know, Daniel Warren Johnson, like, I can't remember having that complaint. So it's just like that one more thing. Yes, it's a good story and it looks amazing and it's exciting, but also you have no problem reading it. That's that sort of, you know, final thing that makes something great.
It is interesting that we are so not that far along any of these Energon stories, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it feels like we've been reading them forever.
Yes.
And then they're just teasing out Megatron. It's got to be a big moment for his return because he's just...
This is the opposite of Ryan North. This is that you have like four series
that
are just like dripping it out. Not yet. It does. It feels like we're still in some version of the cold open.
Yeah.
Like there's like four different cold... Is
there they really haven't left those ships that crashed. The ships crashed. Mm. They didn't really go far from them to fight. And they fought for six issues, and then they're still in the ships. Dark Spaces Dungeon number 5, the final issue of the Scott Snyder Hayden Sherman miniseries. What did you think?
This will be one of your... I'll give an extra spoiler warning because I don't think there's a way to talk about this.
Yeah, you got
to
spoil it.
So, you know, skip
it.
A couple
skip
of
it if you're looking to read it.
They teased in the last issue, they dropped a clue that
what was the clue?
Villain. I forget what it was, but
it was in the hospital, right?
The guy, the tech giant guy said something, oh, we're real good at this. And either they had referred to the villain doing that or it was very obvious. And I thought, that's the kind of, and I kind of wrote it off and forgot about it. And then, so in this one, the victim kid guy shows up at the house and he's just bummed. He's not doing well. And he, you know, then finally he looks up and he's like, it was you. And I thought that was really well done. The approach to that moment.
Yeah.
Because you thought, oh, that guy, you know, I'd kind of forgotten about the other thing. I was like, I guess that's not what they're doing, you know, and he's just beaten up and he's having a hard time. And that makes sense, you know, like work for the character.
That's the end. So this issue is the rescue the son from the dungeon. They kill the bad guy in the mask who's been keeping everybody in the dungeons. There's never a moment where the mask is pulled off and you see who it is. Not that you would know who he is, but still.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting because he like gets shot, he falls down. You see him face down in the back of his head. He was shot by the tech guy. But you never see the mask come off. I thought that was really interesting sort of commentary. And it's not till page 18 on my reader where it's 2 months later where what you're talking about happens, where the cop shows up at the guy's
house. I guess
house
that's what stuck like, with me.
Yeah, he's like not feeling better. Things are not going well for him. Can't get over it. There's other dungeons out there. We find out he's really upset because he's figured out that the tech guy is the real.
And he has to build up to the moment where he can say a
dungeon
thing.
Master.
Yeah, I mean that's what it is. Basically, this is all a D&D story.
What the fuck is this guy's name? The Keep.
The Keep. Yeah, he doesn't need a name. And this is it. Like this is classic. Is this the last issue?
Yes. Oh, totally. Yeah.
This is the end. It had to be. It had to be a bummer of an ending. Like there's no way everybody can be happily ever after. But I was so like, it bummed me out.
It was a real bummer. And I finished and I thought, okay.
Evil wins.
The way the story was written, there was no other way the story could have ended.
No.
However, I don't know if I needed to be that bummed out at the end of it. Like
it's a downer.
It's a downer. The guy ends up back in the cage and it says the end.
And like he's evil. Yeah, you know, there's crazy evil. And then it's like, this guy's just his own son.
Yeah.
The depiction of the blocks that are in, it's just, God.
Yeah.
What a fucked up thought to have or just like one of those things, like you recognize your anxiety or your fear or something, you put it in the form of a story. What a terrifying, like you just think about these like hard elements that you can't control that move, you know, specifically at will to torture people for unending amounts of time. It's just, ugh.
And the thing is, the last one we read about the convict firefighters had a happy ending. Not a totally happy ending, but it had a happy ending.
You're right. Yeah, they got to.
The hero survived and she beat the bad guys and everyone else had died, but she survived. This one went the other way. And I was like, oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's rough.
I was bummed.
And I'm not complaining.
I get it. And I was impressed that he did it, but like also, man, I was like, ugh, Scott.
And it was a good miniseries. It was a really good book. I don't like these kinds of books. I don't like the bummer ending, but it was captivating. It was a page turner.
Maybe one more issue.
I don't know.
When the reveal happened here, I thought, yes, obviously, but also kind of out of nowhere, but also that's the 5-issue constraint.
I'd give it like maybe instead of one more issue, like another 5 to 10 pages.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, like an extra size, you know, stick 5 on the end of the last 2 stories or something like that. I know that is not how the form works, but that's probably the way to have gone.
The ones we've read that Scott's written have been good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he's been on a real tear. For sure.
But man, I was like, ugh.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally.
Scott, read The Room.
I think The Room is really into depressing shit, so fair enough.
It's a Ted Lasso world now.
You want it to be, but brother, it ain't.
So we haven't talked about Green Lantern in a while, but I wanted to mention Green Lantern 10 for 2 reasons. One, this issue is a backup story that's tied into the Action Comics story. That's called House of Brainiac, which is the story title. This is a House of Brainiac tie-in backup.
Look at that murderer's row of artists.
Written by Jeremy Adams, drawn by Kevin Maguire. And Rosemary Cheatham is still coloring him. I don't know why. This has been a problem for like 15 years.
I think it might be time to accept it.
Old men like me will remember that Kevin Maguire drew the big confrontation between Guy Gardner and Lobo back in Justice League when Lobo hit him, and that's when he turned sweet for a while. Then he gets bit by a rat, hit his head, and he became a jerk again. Anyway, that backup's about Guy Gardner being sent off to find Lobo because he's missing, and this whole mini Lobos thing is happening on Earth. Turns out he's undercover wrestling. He's wrestling against that alien Hulk Hogan that we first saw in Jeremy Adams' Flash. I enjoyed the backup, even if the colors really fuck up the art. I just wanted to mention that I've been really enjoying Green Lantern the whole way through for the most part, and especially when Germanico draws it.
Germanico.
I think it really sings when he's on the art. And, you know, the story is really fun. There's this rogue organization that's taken over the Green Lantern Corps. They're now they're called the United Planet Corps. And all the Earth Lanterns are sort of on the run. Their rings don't really work. And this issue, we had a team up between Hal and Simon Baz. And what's her name? Joe, the new one?
No idea.
They have to go rescue Kelly, the little Brazilian girl that we saw briefly however many years ago in that book, who's like being held captive by these bad guys. Like, it's almost like you're taking the heroes, you're depowering them, you're putting them behind enemy lines, and you're sort of having to survive. I've just been really enjoying this book. It's been a really fun Hal. I like seeing with everybody. Oh, Kyle's there, but he's kind of broken.
Sounds like a bummer.
It's like that moment in the war movie where they got to rescue their buddy and they got to get out. And it's just been really interesting to see them in this situation. Harmonica's a hell of an artist.
He did like that S.H.I.E.L.D. book with James Robinson. Is that right?
No, that was like...
Oh, hey, it was another
Rodriguez.
Like... No, that was another somebody mononomial like person, I believe.
Oh, yes. Not Javier Rodriguez. Yes. Not Harmonica, though. It's different. That's a different guy.
His name was like, Ha! Or something like that.
Terrific artist. The last couple pages are by Amanke Nualfan, who's good, but not as good as Harmonica. So those pages were kind of a drop-off. But I've just been really enjoying Green Lantern, and I just wanted to mention that. That's all.
Have you been all along? I dropped off at some point, and
yeah, that's fine.
I wasn't having fun with it. But have you been into it the whole time?
Yeah. You know, I started off with this sort of Sinestro story, and, you know, it slowly morphed into the story where the Green Lantern Corps has been taken over, and the people in charge are bad, and they're using it for nefarious purposes. So the 1 million Earth Lanterns are coming together to sort of save the day. I've been enjoying it.
ACO, ACO or ASO.
ACO.
ACO, I guess. That was that guy.
Not AOC.
Nope. She
might moonlight as a comic artist. You don't know.
It's possible.
I read Nate Pottmull by number 2, Rick Remender, Bengal. A lot of one-name artists.
Do you picture a tiger?
Yes. Well, I've read several. Yes. I definitely read number 1, and I definitely didn't remember a single thing about it.
I actually didn't either, and I kind of was cool with that because I didn't really love the first issue, but I thought this was, like, as a setup to it, it didn't really tell us anything. So as we got into this was the one that sort of like showed me the world, who these people are, and what they were going for, and I was cool with that.
Yes, I quite enjoyed this. The first couple pages, great. I don't remember anything about this at all.
I really
all.
Didn't remember a thing either. It was more than normal.
I was like, who are these annoying kids and why are they terrible? Are they the real villains of this book? Mm-hmm. But by the end, you have an understanding of the world and what they're trying to do and mm-hmm. the stakes. Like, I thought it was really well done in terms of one single issue resetting. Yeah. You know, there was a whole thing in TV where it was like the first 5 issues of a show have to constantly reset the premise mm-hmm. because people are joining it late. That was the old days when people would join a show late. And so this felt like kind of like that in comic form where he was reselling the premise and reintroducing the characters. And it worked because I did not remember this book even existed, honestly.
I had to look and I was like, what's this one? I was like, oh, right. It was a new Remender book. And what I also thought was interesting is, you know, Rick's usually saying something about mm-hmm. himself or about others. And so I was trying to figure out what that was.
I think he's saying that the young people are awful. That's what I think he's saying here, because the young people are awful.
But in this one, it's the old guy who is obsessed with the past and isn't doing anything is the roadblock. And they're like, no, we have to do something, you know. And by the way, their apartment and house, they looked awesome. It had a bunch of shit everywhere.
And that fucker burned it. These are the villains of the story. I'm kind of rooting for them to die.
I thought they were making the old man get on with life.
By burning Starry Night. Fuck that kid.
I didn't think that was an original.
Yes, that's the whole point, is they've been saving the artifacts of the past.
Okay. So there's old toys in there, too.
I did like it, though.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I've always liked Bengal. Bengal's worked a lot with Remender, and I didn't read it, but there's a preview in the back for Remender's next series, Grommets, which he's writing with Brian Posehn because he's Hollywood Rick Remender now.
You know what Groms are?
A skateboard thing.
Groms are basically what, at least at one point, they would call like kids who are involved in action sports. So if you see like a little kid on a mountain bike, there's a Grom or like a ski, you know, that's what that
anyway,
is.
It takes place in the 80s. I love Deadly Class. I'm really excited for that. I didn't read the preview. I just saw like 2 pages of it. And I said, ooh, and I stopped reading.
Factoid. I picked up News Radio. I've been trying to finish it because I hadn't mm-hmm. gotten there, and I'm putting it off the closer we get to the end of that one character. And there was a press conference, and in that the audience was Brian Posehn, who asked one question like way back. And then for some reason, Ron Jeremy, who had no lines.
Another book that was almost pick of the week, and I just was like, I can't, was Amazing Spider-Man 941 or 47. Zeb Wells, Todd Nwok on guest art duties. We talked about this last time. Terrific issue previously. The cover cliffhanger was Ben Reilly and his creepy girlfriend, Hallows Eve, who actually like her power, though, where she puts on a mask and becomes that thing. So it's like a Halloween costume come to life. I kind of like that as a power. It's a good patron power.
Again, look at what's happening. Bizarro, Lobo.
I don't like Ben Reilly. I'm just saying her power's cool. Everyone chill.
Listen, you're opening the door. Old Connor would have been like, I'm not reading this. It's stupid.
Take away the Ben Reilly cold open. I loved Peter's awkward date with the nurse from the previous issue.
Good stuff.
I loved when Pete had to run out on a date. Classic Spider-Man. to go save Betty Brant, and he becomes who he can occasionally unleash is fucking terrifying, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. If you fuck with his old friends, he does not quip, and he will beat you into pulp. And that's basically what happens here. And even Betty's like, whoa, what's wrong with you? And he's like, you screw with my friends,
you don't get jokes.
I thought that was a really good sequence where he saves her. And then, you know, Ben Reilly shows up. And I thought the date and the Betty scene are terrific.
And then the Red She-Hulk Goblin.
Goblin Queen. Queen Goblin.
Whatever. You know what? And all the other thing is this, and this has been, I guess, a theme this week, is I was like, who's drawing this? This is beautiful.
Todd Nwok.
Todd Nwok, who I haven't seen in a while. The only problem with Todd Nwok in here is that he does a lot of veteran artists. Peter went on this date and he's running away, and I was like, ugh, he has a work polo tucked into his pants. How fucking old is this guy?
She should have been like, I made a huge error here. I'm sorry.
One of the best beats in it was Izzy starts to run away. I got to go. I'm sorry. It's personal. And he goes, I like you a lot. And I thought that was a really good line. But then it's just totally undercut by three panels later. It's like, oh, yeah, he left her with a bill. And I was like, oh, that hurt. That was like Jon Favreau leaving those messages.
Stop.
Right?
Stop. I have PTSD from that scene. Yeah, I thought from the date through the rescue, I was loving life. I thought this was a terrific Spider-Man. Yeah. I mean, look at that shot of Peter swinging on page 13. I think Todd Nwok was a terrific Spider-Man. He's a little lanky, but I like it.
No, I like that. That works. That Peter swinging is like some weird, perfect amalgamation of McFarlane and Romita Sr. Look at
interesting.
It. Yeah. Look at the curve. There's a curve that goes around his arms. It's like a perfect C shape. And then there's another one in his leg sort of going opposite with the webs going around it. That's composition, my friends. That is quality. And then look at it. It goes into the background. There's the vanishing point. So you really see. Oh, it's really
And
nice.
Also the buildings. Look, the buildings are curved in an unnatural way. He's a veteran and he just does not work enough. Or I don't know, maybe he is. He doesn't work enough where I see him. Mm-hmm. And it's all about me at the end of the day.
Well, that means that he's not getting hired for the Connor only reads top tier shit.
Maybe he's doing other really lucrative work that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, it's very possible. Here we are. I'm going to be talking about Aliens What If number 2, which was one of those like, do I need to read this? And I was like,
did you talk about the first one too?
We did. And I was like, it wasn't that good. And I was like, and it got there and I was like, I am going to read it. And this is fucking wacky shit. I came around like it was
just one story.
Before. Yeah, it's one story, five issues.
With five writers?
So this is the thing. All right, this is written, this comic book.
Two pages
book,
each?
This comic book is written by Hans Rodionoff and Leon Reiser. And then credit for the ideas, I guess, is Paul Reiser, who played this character in the movie, Adam F. Goldberg, TV writer, you know, did the Goldbergs. And then Brian Volk Weiss, a name I'd never heard before until the Nacellaverse was a thing. And our friend Jim Biscardi told me that like he's a very popular toy collector / television producer. Like these kind of some heavy hitters here on this like dumb story.
So do you get a comic if you're a toy collector?
Dude, I don't know. I think he's more than that. Well, yeah, obviously he just did, but he made toy collecting into a whole thing. I don't know. Biscardi knew all about it. You can ask him.
Sounds like him.
The deal is here is that it's what if Reiser's character from Aliens didn't die?
Right.
Which is absurd. If anything had to happen in that movie, that guy had to die. Or he'd be like Ike Clanton in Tombstone, and he just would. Either way, he comes back, he gets banished to some stupid world that Yutani basically puts him, not unlike happened to Vic Mackey in The Shield.
Oh.
And his life sucks, his daughter hates him, and he salvages an old replicant. And there's a very funny scene with the replicant. He sends the replicant off to find him a living xenomorph egg. And the replicant's like, there's a great scene there. The replicant's like, you'll probably be dead by the time I get back. And he's like, it's all right. It's all right. And so years later, he comes back and he has an egg. And he's got some idea about like curing cancer or something. But he has to find somebody to implant the egg in. So they're like going through an office and trying to find the worst person they can put in a room with a replicant egg.
Right.
And they do. And that's the end of the issue. And I was like, all right. You know, like we've said like a lot of time, we've been talking about Alien comics a lot. And it's like the story always goes the same way. So I was like, this seems to be an Aliens comedy. And I haven't seen that genre before. And let's be completely
that's
frank
true.
Here.
That's
the
true.
Paul Reiser in this is not the character from the movie. This is Paul Reiser. Like, this is like the sitcom TV version of Paul Reiser.
So is Paul Reiser from Mad About You?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I didn't watch the show enough to tell you, but it's not, you know, it's not dramatic Paul Reiser.
It's not Diner Paul Reiser?
No. it's the comedian for sure.
Is it then Paul Reiser from Beverly Hills Cop? Is he constantly not in the right office?
I don't remember that. Like, I vaguely remember it.
This is not my office. This is not my locker. I really enjoyed last week's Aliens Black and White issue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was, yeah.
That's been a great series.
It's telling you, it's a golden age for Aliens comics.
Who would have thought?
I know.
Josh living his best alien life. So those are the books we want to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron of the show gets a vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, by overwhelming numbers, the winner was Uncanny Valley, number one from Boom Studios, written by Tony Fleeks. Art Fleece. By Dave Wachter.
Fleece. Was it Fleek? Somebody wrote in. I believe he's on. I'm not even going to say it. I don't remember. Somebody wrote in and told us how to say it, and now I don't remember. And I don't think you do either. So we just went back to saying what? I think it's Fleece. I don't know. It feels like it's Fleece to me.
That could be. Fleece. I'm just going to call him Tony. Pat Brousseau on letters.
He's always fooling people or providing lightweight warmth.
So this is a story of a boy who has very interesting parentage or at least heritage, which he discovers through this issue. And I definitely wouldn't have read this without the patron pick.
Same.
But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really inventive. I thought it was really unusual. I don't think I've ever read a story like this. We say this every single time he shows up, but Dave Wachter is terrific.
And doing like multiple styles too.
Yeah.
He's a great artist.
And Tony Fleece, who is the co-writer and artist on the terrific Local Man book with Tim Seeley over at Image, is a very good writer. I finished this and I was like, wow, I've never read a story like that, ever. I've been reading comics for 40 years and I've never read a book like that.
Actually, yes, but no. There was two things that it reminded me of. First of all, I wish very much, and nobody could help this.
Spoilers, by the way. There's no way to talk about this without spoiling the big twist, so spoilers.
I wish that the cover hadn't told me anything. Right. I wish that I had read this as a straight-up story, because the cover, it kind of worked, because the cover like told me one thing, and then I started reading it, and I was like, this is a 90s after-school special. And there's a twist that happens, and there are some breadcrumbs they leave. Suffice to say, I'll get out of the way, is that it turns out that this kid who is the son of a single mother, we find out that her father is more or less Yosemite Sam. And so you said there's nothing like this. And I was like, well, there's a lot of Roger Rabbit in this, which is sort of the first thing I ever saw that did that. But that's just like the cartoon stuff mixing with the real world, which is just an awesome concept.
This is the fallout of Cool World or Roger Rabbit of humans banging cartoons. This is the fallout.
Do you remember that Garth Ennis story?
No.
The Wacky Races book?
Oh,
and in it, the president and everybody just started turning into cartoons because of some dimensional rift or something like that. And like wacky cartoon shit started happening to regular people. And it was a better version of that, because it started with real human people. That whole thing was a farce. But this one started off with, I mean, what was really sort of well written and produced family drama.
Right. So the kid is new in town and his two friends cut class. Beautifully drawn. Look at the painted colors on the trees. I love Dave Wachter. So they're cutting class and he's the new kid. They're making him come along. He doesn't want to do it. They go to a bridge and they're going to jump off and he's going to jump off. And the whole, like, you actually did the whole jump off the bridge thing. Like, that was really funny with the mom.
Yes, it was.
She was more concerned with him being a cliche than anything else. They jump off the bridge and the two kids break their legs and he falls into the earth and makes a human shaped hole like in a cartoon, and a bunch of cartoon bluebirds fly around his head. And that's the first indication that something is off here.
I didn't notice the birds, but that should have been a bigger clue than it was for me. I was like, what are those, soft leaves? I was like, that's a weird way to draw that. Of
soft mud.
I just thought that was depicted oddly, and I just didn't put it together. And then there was another thing that happened where he was watching TV and a bird flew out of it and again left a bird-shaped hole in the thing, which is a classic Connor joke, by the way, is leaving a whoever-shaped hole
in the wall. Yeah. I love that joke.
There's some other clue that happens slightly before that that I sort of started to get it. And I thought it was going to be, because we don't know who his dad is, I thought, we're going to find his dad was a cartoon. But then they sort of twisted it and it turned out that the mom, you know, is written. We don't know who the dad is, because that could still be a thing, obviously.
The mom, I thought, was a terrifically written and conceived character. She seemed very real. She was drawn very real. She was a real human body. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to describe this without feeling weird, but like, she was drawn as like a real adult. And she was like, you know, a pretty nurse, but not like a supermodel.
Working mom.
Although if she's a traveling nurse, they would be doing okay, because those nurses get paid a lot of money.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have a house.
Well, I think they're probably just renting it because they're traveling.
I get it. But it's like a lived-in place. But whatever.
No, I'm saying is they're worried about money, but like, those nurses can pay a hell of a lot of money to travel around the country.
Single moms, hard to be. I thought that the reveal with the crows was really cool.
Yeah.
Because you see them and then you see them from the back and they just look like crows and it's like, oh, that's creepy. And then the next time you see them, you start to see their faces and they're like, you don't quite recognize that they're cartoony, but the lines around them are different than the lines around everything else. And the color,
they could be cartoony, but also they could just be comic booky. It's hard to tell until the
right. But if you look at like they are stark black and everything else is shaded and, you know, they are like the bold primary colors. And then as the more we see them every page, like the faces are clearly drawn as cartoons. And then the entrance of the Yosemite Sam is a big panel that just says boom with red and yellow, like, you know, like a cartoon when something gets hit. And he's got the blunderbuss. God, I forgot about blunderbusses. Every cartoon character had a blunderbuss.
He's like the Terminator line, come with me if you want to live, basically. And then he's just like, Oliver, this is your grandpa. He's like, my what? Hey, partner. And it was just like, at that point, became comedic, but also really, you know, action and packed and sad. It's like
scary.
I mean, the crows take his blunderbuss. He goes, why are you? And runs after them. But then, you know, the crows peck the mom to death. I was really legitimately sad about that.
That was very sad, and it was a terrible moment, but she's part cartoon. I think she's going to be back.
Yeah, probably.
But then, so in all that, like, we come
back. And he leaves a human-shaped hole in the wall, and that's all I ever want to do in my life.
Right, but before, okay, first
he gets
was a
the fast
purge.
Legs. He gets the fast legs.
I know. I was like, when I realized what I was looking at, I was like, all right, that I've never seen before. Like, I've seen a cartoon do it, but I've never seen a realistic, quote-unquote, human do it. And then he leaves. He's got the double, the twofer here, is that he does the cartoon tornado legs. Then he leaves dust cloud that is shaped like him. Then he leaves the hole in the house that is shaped like him. And I was like, so that's three.
But this is all happening within like a serious,
yes,
tense situation. Yeah.
And the sort of difference between drawing the cartoon, to be honest, the worst thing he did in here is the Yosemite Sam cartoon. He's almost too simple. But I think they're also like, hey, let's not get sued. So they just got to keep it.
He's a prospector, I suppose you assume. I mean,
I know, it's all the shapes.
Kind of a prospector. Yeah.
I guess, whatever. You know, so you've got that, but then
he's
like
a farmer, I guess.
What an amazingly well-drawn car, you know, and what a cool way to draw a character who is more or less realistic, photorealistic with tornado legs.
How many substances do you think were involved in the making of this book or the concepting of this book?
Oh, no, this to me sounds like, this feels like nerds who really thought about it.
I thought this was really fun.
It really was.
I even thought about it as Pick of the Week for a minute. I just was really happy. I'm really happy they picked it. We always like to complain that patrons pick a book we hate because they know we're going to hate it and they pick it anyway. But every once in a while, they pick a book that we really like that we wouldn't have seen otherwise. This is one of those books I really liked. I was looking forward to more of it.
I mean, you said to me earlier today, you're like, it's this book. I didn't know what it was. I actually think I looked at the cover. Didn't read anything about it. And I saw it was Tony Fleece. And I'm going to admit that. I went, whatever. That's just like, to me, like, that's a name. He's a Workaday guy. You know, he does some comics every once in a while. Nothing's ever stood out to me, whatever. And, you know, you got to pick your battles. And I just moved along. I didn't read it. And so I went into it like, okay, don't forget to read it. I'll just, and I was reading, I was like, this is great. And it was such a nice surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
I love that. It was enjoyable. So thank you.
So let's do ratings on Uncanny Valley number one ratings out of five. I'm going to do 4.25.
Wow, you and I are in sync lately. This has been happening a lot. I was going to say that exactly. And yeah, I was bummed when it was over. I was like, no, not now. I'll get it next.
So we'll be sticking with Uncanny Valley. Thanks, patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron gets to vote, but if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show like Alan Alvarez.
Good name.
You know how Emma Frost can turn into a diamond person?
Yes.
Alan can turn into a prism person.
You said diamond, and in my head I went pudding, and you almost started to say it, but go on.
Pudding?
A pudding person.
A pudding person?
Yeah, like somebody goes to punch you, and it's like...
Plus, everyone's always licking you.
Yeah. But ultimately, like, you think pudding's going to be really good, but instead it's disappointing.
It's tapioca. Yeah. So, prism. He's a human prism. Light goes through him, refracts into rainbows, and he's a prism person.
Is that something he can direct? Can he adjust the prism's directions of light and such?
Yeah, I mean, if he tries really hard, concentrates, he could probably direct a benign rainbow.
So there's no, like, burning ants and
there's
laser
no
focus?
There's no offensive power here. He just, you know, light hits him and it's a party.
It sounds nice.
Yeah.
Our front door gets hit by the sun, and we have one of those little decorative windows at the top of it, and it creates a little rainbow every day on the front sort of walkway.
That's beautiful. See, just sometimes bring a little beauty to people's lives, Alan.
That's fine. That's good.
Alan Alvarez, you're the human prism. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks for being a patron, Alan. We appreciate it. And he supports the show directly from Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where people who feel like the shows we're supporting go and help us directly there. Plus, there's iFanboy.threadless.com, which is our t-shirt store. iFanboy.com/supports, our PayPal link for all you new billionaires out there. iFanboy.com/Amazons, our Booksplode books and our general shopping link. And bookshop.org is our partner for local bookshop fulfillment from our Booksplode shows.
So yeah, Booksplode, see?
Supporting the show in any way you can. We are long, I think. We'll do one email. We've been good about not skipping emails no matter how long we are. So we'll do one email. Mm. We were shamed last year, so we're going to keep it up. Peter S. from Cape Coral, Florida. I've been thinking about this question for about 72 hours upon reading Chris Claremont and Dave Crockrum's Uncanny X-Men 104 and learning that Magneto was, spoiler, once turned into a six-month-old baby. This got me thinking, which comic run or runs rank highest on your personal gosh scales? We haven't used the word gosh in a while, I don't think. Some of the new listeners don't even know what that means. Good old superheroes. Sort of the like
comic
classic
runs rank.
Classic superhero feel. That's fun, delightful, swashbuckly. I'll tell you what I think. When I think of goshy comics, for some reason my brain goes immediately to Burns West Coast Avengers. I don't know why.
That's a good answer.
But that seems to be the sweet spot of that sort of late 80s, early 90s Marvel-y team stuff.
So it's interesting you said that, because when he said it, I was thinking of like a modern interpretation of gosh, like when somebody brings back good old superheroes in a time when that's not sort of the thing to do. And so by you saying like that's OG gosh, that's
right.
That's where the love of it comes from.
Well, he's asking for which runs that rank highest. I think he's just talking about all time, because he's looking at Uncanny X-Men 104.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I feel like I'm blank. So anyways, my first answer was going to be like a modern interpretation of that would have probably been like that Dan Slott Fantastic Four run. I think that was like...
That was good gosh comics.
Full on gosh, like just leaning into the superhero thing.
Well, I think the question is, if you're explaining gosh to someone who's never heard the show before, God bless him, what comic would you point to as an example of what we're talking about? That's the question, I think.
I think of one of my first trade paperbacks that I ever bought, which was The Greatest Joker Stories Ever Told.
Ooh.
And the first time I came across those 60s and 70s Neil Adams books, and I picture an uncaped Batman in a tank with the shark.
With his hairy chest and...
Yeah, maybe. But it, like in the Joker fish?
Yeah.
Like all that stuff. Like I think of that. It's dramatic. You know what I mean? It's overwrought. It's not necessarily silly, but it is silly. Like, it wasn't trying to be cool. I mean, it was, but not like comics are too good for me. They're leaning into comics, which is, you know, not being afraid of the art.
I think
form.
It's really, you sort of nailed it. It's about that era where it wasn't about being cool and dark and gritty. It was like...
It was about being cool.
It was
but
soap
in the,
opera comics. It was big old adventure stories. Romance happens, drama... That's why I think of team books, because those are perfect for interpersonal drama, interpersonal romance. Ultron shows up, Tigra's pissed at Hawkeye, She-Hulk makes an appearance. Like, it's all like,
oh,
it's that kind of feel to me is what I think of with gosh.
This is sort of related, but a number of years ago I read, and it's very difficult for me to remember specific stories from when I was a little kid. So a lot of it really is like a feeling, you know what I mean? But not too many years ago, it's probably like 8 years ago at this point, I don't know. I read, there was a Hawkeye miniseries from that era, and I'm going to try to look up who did it, but it was wacky as shit. Like it had everything, and I think he was hunted by John Walker in it.
Oh,
and
okay.
So like there was, you know, everything was...
It's almost like pornography, like, you know, when you see it, right? It's a feeling you get when you read it. And it's, again, of course, obviously it's stuff from our childhood, but that's sort of the thing of it. It's like post-Roy Thomas, pre- Marvel Knights is sort of that gashi era for me.
Yeah.
Even Captain America, his whole run, his whole Mark Gruenwald run with Diamondback. And
oh, I love that.
That was all very gashi. You know, it felt like a big old soap opera.
This isn't the same one, but it's a Hawkeye miniseries. Maybe that, you know what? I might be conflating. I think there was a U.S. Agent miniseries that I read that was that too. That was actually a really good one. But there is a 1983 series, Hawkeye, 4-issue miniseries, written and drawn by Mark Gruenwald. I think Gruenwald's an excellent example of somebody who did modern comics, but in an era where modern comics were a different thing than they are.
Right.
Yeah, like full on leaning into the superhero comics. You know, these are for kids. They should be, gosh, man. I mean, it's almost like the first 12 issues of the G.I. Joe comic. Like, they weren't superheroes, but they were good old superhero comics.
80s and 90s. These things are being read by adults, but they're supposed to be for kids. So they're we're making them really fun, but they're kind of silly, but also dramatic. And I mean, it's the same tone as a soap opera, which I loved as a kid and as a young adult. So it's like that kind of thing. It's where, you know, a major twist would happen. Oh my God, Hawkeye's still alive. And then come back in 30 days to find
out more.
Listen
to this. Enthralled by his relationship, Clint opens up to his new girlfriend, Sheila Danning, about his superhero origin. The date ends abruptly when Hawkeye investigates a break-in at Cross Technologies, and the intruder's none other than Mockingbird.
Ooh.
Right? You're hooked. You want to read that story right now.
That's what I mean. It's the twist. It's like you can imagine that being the last page reveal, that it's the Mockingbird, and now his ex has showed up. Like, that's what it is.
And you look at her outfit on the cover, and it's not the bikini one. It's the long sleeves one. And they both have pirate boots on, and they're flapping in the breeze.
What's the name of the book?
Hawkeye. Hawkeye 1981.
1981.
I mean, sorry, 1983, number one.
1983.
September 1st, 1983. By the way, if you look up Hawkeye miniseries, you're going to find a lot of stuff about that Disney show, which was fine, but it ain't Mark Gruenwald.
Oh, that's a good cover.
It's a fine cover.
That's a good cover.
Mm-hmm.
A little more effort into the background, because it is a cover, but yes.
Yeah, but the thing is, I remember back then seeing covers that were white that let the characters stand forward. I really liked that. I remember a lot of those.
What do you want for 60 cents?
The Simonson Thors. There you go. Right. Simonson Thor.
Right.
Do you think that a Gosh superhero, like an original Gosh superhero, that's redundant, an original Gosh book has to have been released before 1986?
No, I don't think so. We just talked about
Death of Superman.
Dan Slott.
Yeah, but that's like postmodern.
Postmodern, gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
Probably. No. I don't think so.
I don't think Dan Slott was doing postmodern, by the way. I think he was doing comics that he loved.
When was West Coast Avengers number one?
Actually, that's after 86.
84.
Yeah, okay.
84. I don't think so. Because it hadn't changed everything right away.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, we read Death of Superman. We did that. That was great.
Yeah. Oh, man. Look at that cover for West Coast Avengers 1. Avengers Assemble. Who will answer Hawkeye's call to join the new team? That was the most exciting cover a young Connor could find at a comic store. A bunch of heads with question marks in the upper left-hand box. Who's going to join the team? Is Cyclops going to join? Is Namor?
Who is that wolf guy? Who is the Shroud? Is that Samson Greenhead? What's his name? The Hulk.
Oh, Doc Samson? Yes,
Doc Samson. Samson. Okay.
Oh, imagine a team that's Doc Samson, Cyclops, the Shroud dude, and the Wolfhead guy, and the Hawkeye.
Who's next to Puck? Who's that blonde?
Is that Medusa?
No, Medusa.
Not Medusa.
Hair.
Is it the other one?
Crystal? No, she had the black line around the back of her head.
I don't know who that is.
Is that Janet Van Dyne in the lower right corner?
No, that's Black Widow. She had short hair back then.
Oh, right. Can we talk about Rom? Why is Rom on that team? I don't even know who Rom is.
Oh, man. Good stuff.
Look at it's great because the at the top is the questioned out heads, and the one next to him is clearly Mockingbird.
Right. Well, it was Mockingbird, and it was Wonder Man and Tigra. And
Iron Man.
Right. Because that's Iron Man in the middle.
Yeah.
Those are the five. Yeah.
Good. It was Rhodey, though, remember? Because the whole book was.
Right.
Yeah, because the whole book was him. This is great, gosh. Thought bubbles are good. The whole time he's like, they don't even know that I'm not Tony Stark. Should I tell them? He's like, it's just insecurity wrapped in power.
Good stuff.
Yes.
You know what, Peter? You win. Good question. I'm smiling right now.
When you read it, I was like, I don't have this. And then it turned into joy.
Thanks for writing in, Peter. Contact at ifanboy.com is how I did it. You can write in also for a Mediasplode show, but Mediasplode in the subject line. Thank you. And real quick, we did a Booksplode Homicide graphic novel part one show 2 weeks ago. This coming week, we'll have our Dune part two review, as well as the second half of the What to Watch Next challenge. That'll be in the Mediasplode coming out this coming week. And then maybe in 3 weeks, we're going to have the Justice League Crisis Infinite Earths review from the Animation Brain Trust, and then there'll be a Talksplode
at
some point soon.
Yeah, there was a vacation that took place.
Right.
And there is to be reconnecting post-vacation.
What's really funny is there's only 2 more weeks in April.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, scheduling is hard. All these shows will eventually come out. Whether they'll come out in the right month, who's to say? We also wanted to thank Chris Albrecht over at Open Water, who had Josh and I on a live webinar this past week discussing how to podcast and the history of iFanboy. It's going to be available on their YouTube eventually. When that happens, we'll link it. We had a good time. Talked for about an hour. It was supposed to be half an hour, but we kept babbling on because that's what we do. Discussed podcasting, the business of podcasting, the iFanboy's history. It was a fun conversation. Chris is an awesome dude we've known for a while. So thanks for having us on.
There are 1,365 shows.
Woo!
And counting, not counting the 50 not loaded Make Comics shows over at iFanboy.com and wherever podcasts are sold. Follow us at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. We'll tell you what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Sometimes it's the best of the panels. We do these little great clips from the show that I think really whet the appetite. I'm very proud of those. You can follow Connor and I individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and Jay Flanagan. You can subscribe to youtube.com/iFanboy, where you will find all of those little video shows, which do not count towards the 1,365 number.
No.
I want to make that clear. And each video show was significantly more than an audio show, so they count for more. We will post an audio version of this show every week with an exciting still frame. Lest you think you're getting video of us, we decided we didn't want to get prettied up for this thing. Consider writing a review or leaving a star rating or smashing that like button or subscribing, whatever it is. If you ever see a thing like, I could do this pretty easily, do that thing. That's the show. Thank God you're back.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. I missed you and everyone listening. I missed all of you.
It should be known, like, when he doesn't do the show or when I don't do it, we talk about the comics. We definitely are like, make sure you're in it. Okay, that was
cool, also, yeah. The people who aren't on our Discord don't know that when you dropped in my clips, my one-word reviews last week, you forgot the most important one of all, which is my Batman review. No one will ever hear it, except for those on the Discord. I put it in, and I let them hear it there.
Spoiler, he didn't like it. He really didn't like it, but he keeps reading it.
Could you tell I was screaming into a pillow? That's what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I kept having to leave. I'm going, I got to go upstairs for a minute and record something and be back.
I love it. It worked out great. It was fun.
And it's getting hot. We had a heat wave this week in LA. I'm literally sweating right here. So I'm going to go cool my brain off. And until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
That's it?
I don't know.